Did you miss our live stream coverage of the Acronis CyberFit Summit? Well, I've got the day two audio for you. Our interview with the CEO, their VP of research, information from the breakout sessions, and learn about marketing and their cyber foundation on this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. Well, welcome to The Business of Tech, live streaming from the Acronis CyberFit Summit in Miami, despite the bad weather that's on its way. Appreciate you joining us for this broadcast this evening. We're going to be diving into some more of the content. Yesterday, we dove into a lot of the keynote addresses and the messages from executives. And today, we're going to be diving into much more of the breakout sessions. We're going to give you some more specifics around some of the things you can learn. You get a lot of insights from the other attendees. You'll get a lot of intro and insights from the various discussions. And we'll try and get you into some of those specific breakout bits so that you can get some of those same nuggets that you might have gotten if you were here. We're going to cover that. We'll be talking about a bunch of man on the street interviews so you can get some feedback. And as promised, I have follow-ups to my questions for the CEO and for the VP of research. So we're going to dive into all of our content. First off, though, tonight, I want to actually give you some of the feedback from the floor. It's been really busy. Hopefully you can't even hear some of the background noise here because we're right on the show floor as we communicate with you this evening. We spent some time talking with attendees here at the CyberFit Summit, and we asked them, what's their big takeaway? So let's go ahead and hear from some of the attendees in this interview segment.
One big thing is that Acronis built up from a small backup company to a big managed service cyber company. And I must look for all the competitors here. We can work closer together to the cybercrime.
It's not necessarily one item. It's just an overall gut feeling I've been having that the market is trending in a certain direction and that it wasn't just a gut feeling. It's actually what I'm seeing. I guess there's a lot of inputs out there that have been guiding me towards that conclusion where everything is going cloud, everything is going subscription model, and everything is going cyber.
The big thing I took away from this morning was how big an issue cybersecurity is. If we looked at it as like an economy, it's the third largest next to the United States and China.
I think the big thing I took away from all the sessions is to hear that not just in the U.S., we have a common problem with IT resources. We have a common issue with IT speaking a different language. It was good to hear that because all of us struggle with resources. It's hard to retain the resources, no matter what you pay them, how you treat them, but it's a common theme across the world.
What's amazing to me is just how things have changed so quickly, right? Especially on the side of security. The amount of data that we all produce day in, day out, and how important it is to actually take care of that, and that anyone's up to any sort of hacking or any sort of problems with that. So I guess what I'm taking out is the importance of making sure that you're covered in how you're managing all your data.
When you're selling, a lot of us try to sell the service, but I've realized it's important to connect with the people aspect and understand what's important to their business so that, you know, you can be a partner, not just some vendor trying to sell something.
Over the past few days here, I have learned that if we all share our experience and knowledge, we can achieve great things. So it's all about contributing. And that's what I like about Acronis. This is a close community, very familiar like atmosphere, and we all contribute here. And that's what I like about this kind of summits.
For me, I've learned a lot about the integration aspect of all the partners associated with Acronis that helps us as MSPs better perform our tasks. And we see things that will help us present our clients with a better product.
Excitement that you definitely get a real sense of the excitement here from the show floor as people are getting a lot of deep knowledge and insights from the attendees, from the attendees and from the sessions. So yesterday, I broke down the keynotes in yesterday's live stream. And one of the things that really intrigued me was the positioning around platform that the CEO of Acronis has really positioned in his addresses. So he and I had the chance to sit down today, and we actually went ahead and we had a conversation about that. And I really went ahead and dug into some of my follow-ups. In particular, if you remember from yesterday, the conversation was around their positioning as a platform, and they were discussing all the various parts of that from a security, and they made an offhand comment about the automation and management piece. So I followed up there, as well as following up on some of my SaaS questions. So let's go ahead and hear a portion of that interview right now. I want to follow up to something you said in the keynote that's been kind of sticking with me, and I wanted to start here. You gave a really interesting presentation about the whole platform and the way you've positioned everything, but you were really casual about automation and management. It was really interesting to me that you said you were talking about the platform and backup and the security and all of the new features, and you said, and we have automation and management. Is that intentional?
So first, thanks for having me. And yes, it was intentional because we are currently building all the capabilities in automation and management. We have some very exciting stuff which is going to come there in the future. And I didn't want to spoil everything in my keynote yet.
Okay. So that explains a little bit. Because from my perspective, and I really want to get your reaction to this premise. If I squint and I look at the entire Acronis stack, I actually can see you've got the whole end-to-end managed services platform. And I would include even now kind of the traditional RMM components, but you guys aren't explicitly saying that. Am I missing something in that premise?
No, I think yes, we have the full stack and the offering, but equally importantly, we have very, very strong partners with whom we are actually filling and will continue to fill these gaps, especially in the RMM or PSA space. And as we are truly relying and working with partners when it's about protecting the end customer, the same is true when you think about the completion of our capabilities.
That makes sense. And you brought up that piece around hosting and online and cloud. And you mentioned in your keynote the drive to SaaS. Again, something I think we're in alignment on, because I've been saying the same thing on the show. How are you thinking about what's necessary for SaaS in particular? When we get more than just cloud, but specifically the challenges around SaaS, where do you think you're needing to spend time as a provider of security and platform here to address that?
So the one thing you have to focus on as an MSP when you use SaaS applications for your end customers is protecting the data. Because every SaaS application out there, of course, does have certain disaster recovery capabilities, does have certain backup capabilities included. At the same time, they don't guarantee it to you usually. And you rather have your data somewhere else protected so that in worst case, you can actually play it back in one way or the other. And there are many different forms where it did happen already in the past for many, many different reasons. But that's the one thing where I always tell my people, and I do this by myself actually when it's about my personal data, always and always have a copy of the data somewhere else in a different cloud, in a different system, because that's the only way you can really protect your data.
It's a logical approach. Patrick was very generous with his time. He and I had a longer conversation about a number of topics, including where he thought the marketplace was going and what he would do if he was starting an MSP today. So we'll be putting that together as a bonus episode of The Business of Tech. Make sure to hit those like and subscribe buttons so that you can get notified by hitting the notification button, and you'll find out when that goes live. I was really intrigued with that positioning, and additionally, the time and effort that the Acronis team has put into research. And so they actually have an entire research group that publishes data, that does a bunch of research, and as you might guess, does all the testing against security threats to understand what they need to protect against. So I had the opportunity to sit down with the VP of research, Candid Roost, who's actually one of the keynote addresses from yesterday. And he and I talked a little bit more about some of those challenges. In fact, one of the biggest things that he said on stage that we wanted to talk a little bit more was the proliferation of security tools. He's very keen on discussing that. And so we've actually got some of that interview that I want to go ahead and share with you right now. So let's dive in with that interview with the VP of Research, Candid Roost.
I'm not getting tired of quoting that 22% of the companies out there are using more than 10 security solutions in parallel. That's, I mean, for me, that's like juggling with running chainsaws. And I'm a bad juggler. So it's not going to get ending nicely, right? So we need to be prepared. And I think we're getting there. So in 3 years, hopefully many people will have shifted. But realistically, we still have passwords 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in 3 years as well. So not everyone will be already at the finishing line.
So you have quoted that a couple of times. You like that data point around the number of tools. But talk to me a little bit about the sort of balance. How do you measure that? Because you can, so we could probably agree one tool might not be enough.
Absolutely. And,
but then you apply 10 is too many. I think I even talked once to a provider who has 42, and we can definitely know he's way on the wrong end of that. But it, but raw number isn't the right measurement. What is the measurement you think about when you think about that statistic?
I think that's a fair point to make. And I think as well, the balance has to be depending on your company size and kind of what you do, right? For a small company, like let's say some hairdresser salon, it might definitely be different than a manufacturing line, which has global entities and everything. So it has to be somewhere in between. But I think it should be a handful in the end, because the more you have, the more complicated it will get. And of course, it also means more training, more things that can go wrong and so on. So I think if we're getting there, and don't get me wrong, I mean, maybe there are multiple solutions as well, but if they're well integrated through APIs and everything, then this can be another solution as well.
When you think about AI-enabled tools, what does that mean in a practical sense?
Yeah, it's a great question. And there have been many studies that show that I think half of the tools which claim to have AI are merely just statistics, right? I mean, in the end, yes, it's kind of get a gray area of kind of what is considered machine learning, what is machine intelligence or artificial intelligence. And yes, having those Terminator, Skynet, and HAL, I mean, those are, of course, the Hollywood scenarios. For me, it's using an automated way in finding anomalies in large data sets, for example, or of course, having an expert in a box. So training a algorithm, in that case, a model, to learn from human experience, but then being able to transfer that quickly to a new data set.
The big thing that most providers are really afraid of is the loss of control there, you know, is that they feel a loss of control. As you think about this from a research perspective and where you're planning, how do you envision the role of SaaS and what the provider is doing 3 and 5 years out?
I mean, I fully agree that SaaS will be the majority for the small and mid-sized companies because it's a dynamic way, it's easy to adapt and everything, and it doesn't really need much resources from the organization itself. But the data ownership, sovereignty, is still with that company that produces the data, right? So I think a lot of smaller companies think, oh, I just sign up some SaaS application and all my worries are gone because now I have someone else taking care of it. Not entirely, right? For some, you might still be liable even if the other company gets breached. So better read that fine print. And of the other things, of course, you want to make sure that you know what's happening with the data. So the visibility across it.
At the risk of a bad pun, I have appreciated how candid that the executive team has been and how they've made themselves available. As I said, we're going to go ahead and do a longer versions of those interviews with both Patrick and Candid, and we'll go ahead and release those on the channel. Now, if you do have questions while we're broadcasting this evening, go ahead and remember to put those into the chat window. We'll make sure to address those over the course of the conversation this evening. Look forward to hearing from you ongoing. If you didn't catch it during the live stream and want to go ahead and do it later, go ahead and put it in the comments section below of the video, and I will be going ahead and following up after as well. So you get a sense of kind of the reaction from the various attendees, as well as some follow-ups now from the executives. I want to go a little deeper with some of the content that's been put on here at the show. And actually, let's dive into one of those sessions in almost its entirety. In fact, I've broken down the sections here around a speaker, Joe Morgan. Now, Joe ran a cloud solution provider, cloud services provider, built it up with the fantastic name of Joe's Data Center. That was his company name. He's actually moved on now from that solution provider, but did a whole session on best practices for building out a solution provider business around the cloud. We attended that session, and I want to pull some of the highlights for you. Let's go ahead and dive in so you get a sample of the session that Joe Morgan put on here at the show.
My first suggestion is find a good partner to work with. Don't try to boil the ocean. I know everybody out there wants to support multi-cloud, but I'm telling you right now, there's just way too many features, different pricing models. There's way too much training and competencies that it takes to be able to do that. So my suggestion is that you start with a non-hyperscaler cloud environment. And the reason that I would say to start with that and start with one is that you can always expand to multi-cloud later on. The next thing I would say is that you need to have a solid value proposition. Find your niche in the market. Don't just go, okay, well, I found this partner. They list that they can do all of these different things on their website, so I'm going to try to do those same things as well. You know, there's lots of different ways to be successful selling cloud. My recommendation would be find that specific place where you want to be an expert in the market. The next thing I would suggest you do is have a good plan for how you're going to actually get into that niche market. So once again, there's always a little bit of fake it till you make it when you're starting out in any new business opportunity, but that's natural because the technology is changing so quickly. There's always lots to learn. So don't feel like you have to know it all, but also don't go in unprepared. So a lot of MSPs start with a lift and shift model where they just take and let's back up the infrastructure and let's put it in the cloud. And that's not a bad method. That's a method that's used across the entire industry right now, but it's not exactly the best way to go about it. There's lots of problems that can come from that that I've seen firsthand, such as the performance doesn't quite meet the expectation. And so suddenly, you're on the day of the actual migration, having moved everything over, trying to figure out how to increase resources suddenly on the fly because everything is built into this one monolithic VM that was just moved over from their on-site server. Well, what happens when you take and you suddenly on the fly change all the resources is 30 days later, the customer gets this unexpected cloud bill that they're now unhappy because the migration didn't go smooth, and they're unhappy because the cost didn't meet the expectation that they had. So if you try to build more cloud native, and what I mean by that is use some of the services that are offered by the cloud platform, whether that be built in VPN as a service so that you can still have it be protected the same way as when it was on-premise, when it comes to maybe local IP addresses and the way that the workstations connect locally. Maybe it be use the database as a service and separate out the product offering so that they can scale at different levels. These are the type of things that when you're building more cloud native are going to inherently make the process go more smooth. The next thing is have a strategy for growth. What happens next? A lot of mistakes I see MSPs make is they don't value their time. And so what happens is they don't price their services in such a way that they can then hire people to expand and duplicate what they're doing.
Now, longtime listeners of the show know that I'm very focused on SaaS as the future of the cloud, particularly the smaller that your organization gets. And I think that's really important to remember that Joe's outlining here an approach that is much more focused around infrastructure as a service versus software as a service. That's my take on it. Now, why do we care on this? I want to say that I think if you're considering infrastructure as a service platforms as a service delivery models, Joe gives a nice way of thinking it out. from my perspective, I'm all in on SaaS, and I think that that's going to be the way this goes a little bit more. But I did want to emphasize that difference and give you that knowledge that Joe was providing out to the audience. We have really appreciated being invited this year by Acronis to attend. I want to note that this is a paid sponsorship ad broadcast, but Acronis took no editorial control of any kind. They've been gracious hosts and given us the freedom to say anything that we wanted to and report as we wanted to. But as such, I think it's only fair that you get an opportunity to hear their message directly. And let's go ahead and roll the Acronis message for you right now. Every client needs cyber protection, but that doesn't mean service providers have to deploy a jumbled patchwork of solutions to get it done. Modern protection starts with Acronis Cyber Protect Cloud. Acronis combines backup, anti-malware, endpoint protection, management, and robust ransomware defense, all from a single console. That's why successful MSPs use Acronis to generate more recurring revenue and reduce churn. It's easy to get started at acronis.com.
Modern technology is pretty great, right? I can be in two places at once, both my home studio and here on the show floor. Again, we really appreciated Acronis having us out and giving us the opportunity to report here. Now, let's go into two of the sessions next. In fact, one of the things that I know we are constantly talking about as a solution provider community is the idea of marketing and positioning around that. So we actually attended several sessions this morning, and I want to pull highlights from two of them. First, you're going to hear from Michael Callahan, who's the CMO at Acronis, who did an entire session on marketing and approach. And we'll give highlights from that. Additionally, after that, there was a power panel, and we've got some comments from both Jay McBain of Canalys and Rolly Points from SourcePass. So we're going to go ahead and dive in and give you some of the highlights from those two sessions from this morning.
So how do you create a strong brand? To me, there's one way to do this. Clearly and consistently, how you solve your customers' problems. That is absolutely it. I have seen tens and hundreds of millions of dollars wasted by people getting really fancy, trying to overthink it, by trying to be too witty, too creative, too whatever. And really what people want to know is, do you solve a problem that I have? When you go in and you are trying to sell to the end, to our mutual end user, someone came in before you to sell them, and someone came in after them, and they went to a website and they went to an event. And so it's not in isolation. As much as we all think we're the center of the universe, we're totally not, right? We have I'll give you an example. We have a wonderful partner portal for you guys. It has a ton of really, really strong content on it. Pre-packaged email, like nurture campaigns, web banners, landing pages, emails you can send, data sheets you can co-brand, a lot of really good information. So we send messages out to you guys and say, hey, you should check out the partner portal with some new stuff. We're one of 30 that you get. All the other partners are saying, oh, you should go to our portal. And so we have to find a way, one, to differentiate, but also know that that's what your world is like. So when you are doing this for your own company, think, what else are they seeing that may be similar to what I'm trying to offer them, and how do I differentiate? We work with you. We partner with you all to make sure that you're successful. So our archetype is really about providing structure, giving that platform that gives you the choice, lets you decide, do you want to have one agent? Do you want to have 50 agents? But we give you that choice in the platform, provide that structure, give you back that control, and let you control, your business. And so our archetype is ally. So when you see messaging from us, it'll be about how can we work together? How can we help you? How can we do this as a community? Okay, so that's the archetype. You can search archetype if you're interested in doing more. It's actually like the North Star exercise. It's actually an interesting one to do with a leadership team, either like the most senior leadership team or within a function team, because everyone will have a different idea. And so think about the power, though. If you can get everyone aligned behind the North Star, which it's not easy to do that. It takes multiple meetings to do that. And you get everyone aligned behind an archetype, it's pretty powerful, right? So now you know where you're going and you know how you show up, how you come across. And then it gets into some of the easier stuff. It's harder work, but it's execution at that point. Think about the problem, right? You're solving a problem. So I like the idea of problem and solution, right? So you can do that. We chose to do it, and I'll show you the creative. sort of a left and right or left and right, like problem solution, you can do it multiple ways. You want to have some descriptive messaging, something that's relatable for us. We want it to update us to have more photography, something more current, not just illustrations. In our case, this was the really key piece. So you probably saw this yesterday, or what's today? Tuesday, yeah, yesterday. As I was developing our design, we had a lot of, well, here's some cool coloring, or here's this design or that sign. And what really, really stuck out to me was our whole product strategy and really the company strategy is around this idea of simplicity. And it turns out that in the product, you have those little toggle switches. That's totally unique to us. No one else has that. No one else has anything where you can go, I want to turn on URL filtering and backup, or I want to have some advanced automation stuff and DLP. Nobody has that. So that was like wonderful for me as a marketing person to be able to say, I've got this visual that nobody else has that I can use everywhere. And so you'll see us doing that, and it conveys this idea of simplicity. And so we came up with, you know, you've got this is how simple it is, a switch. You probably have something like that in your company. There's probably something that you guys did. It may have been when you first started that made you unique. See if you can turn that into a visual somehow.
We just did a survey at Canalys 2 weeks ago asking 76,000 MSPs around the world. 51% are increasing their marketing spend given the macroeconomic challenges. They're looking to power their way through the recession, come out of it stronger on the other side.
I agree with that. You can't cut your way out of, you know, you can't cut your way out of growth. So you have to continue to spend on marketing and sales. And it's a little weird. This time is so unknown. You know, the recession is on us. We talk about economic downturn. But if you see in 2008, the companies that came out stronger were the ones that continued to invest in their technology, in their people, in their sales, and their marketing.
Always nice to hear from friend of the show, Jay McBain at Canalys, who's doing a little bit of bringing that research data to the front so that we can get some perspective on that. It's interesting to me that the look, and some of the numbers say that many solution providers spend as little as 1% to 3% of their annual revenues on marketing. And those growth companies spend a lot more than that. So anywhere between 7% and 10%. In fact, I will actually go ahead and reference Marcus Olson interview that I did recently that you should dive into, and some of Marcus's approach, as well as Oren Klopper, whose the interviews are coming out both just recently and a new one just upcoming, where he talks about his heavy investment in marketing. And let me observe, that's both a $36 and $30 million a year revenue services provider talking about their investment in marketing. I have some very strong thinking on marketing as well. Anybody who knows who's watched the show knows that I've talked about the commitment to e-commerce and making it easier to do business transactionally online. I would refer you to several of the videos that I have here on the channel that you should dive into talk about for that. Now, I want to move into one other thing that I found really unique about this show. In fact, most of the time, you know, the show is entirely about content and education, but here there's actually a philanthropy investment as well. Acronis has an entire cyber foundation that they've put up to put forth and really do some really incredible work. And we wanted to take a little bit of time and profile the foundation and give you some insight. So I sat down with two members of the team focused specifically on delivering that promise. Let's go ahead and hear from them now. I want you to hear all about the Acronis Cyber Foundation.
So Acronis Cyber Foundation is a corporate social responsibility activity in Acronis. We build schools in underserved communities around the world, in Latin America, Southeast Asia, Africa. By now, we've built 15 schools, and we have 4 in progress. And we also do IT skills programs in Switzerland, in Singapore for migrants, ex-offenders, kids, seniors. And we also support vulnerable communities with humanitarian aid. And there's many more.
So majority of the funding comes from Acronis. And then we also work with partners of Acronis to build these schools and receive funding from them also. At the summit this year, we have a goal of raising $100,000. That will provide the school construction for Peru and Ecuador.
Well, we like to join forces with partners. It's beneficial for both. It's a you become socially responsible business by it's very simple. You know, we do all the work, we get there, we have the expertise in building schools, we invite partners to join us together, co-fund the school, and it's easy as it is, you know.
We are looking for every school that we build to have a partner alongside that school. So it could be a multitude of ways they could get involved. It could be a financial donation. It could be used computers because we have a computer classroom and we need used computers that we'll refurbish. It could be if it's a certain community that they're familiar with, that they're invested in, it could be volunteering and helping in that way. So there's many different ways that a partner can get involved with the Acronis Cyber Foundation.
Yeah. We took our Acronis team actually this year in July to Malawi, which is like the fourth poorest country in Africa. And we found a remote village there. It has 800 kids and just 5 classrooms, which obviously is not enough to feed all the children. So we went out there to build additional classrooms there. So we actually spent a week together with the team digging trenches, you know, digging latrines for sanitary facilities for the kids. And the school is about to be finished actually by the end of this year. So we are excited to have our 16th school there in Africa. Yeah. And maybe Charles, you want to talk about the Dominican Republic school we've opened?
Yeah, a special story for me is the beginning of the summer, I was in the Dominican Republic with a new school we just finished. And the story, you know, there's one thing building these schools from the United States, but not actually going to the school. And then there's another thing actually being at the school and seeing what's going on. So this is in a remote village in the mountains in the Dominican Republic. And these kids literally walk up to 2 hours each way to the current location where the school is, for the public school system there. So you're walking 3 to 4 hours a day trying to get to school. So therefore, the kids don't go to school. So we actually built a school in the mountains that's next door to this community of children where they can 5 minutes to get to the school, they're good. So a lot of times it's just having access to the education facilities that makes the difference.
We really like to involve our own Acronis people, and they are always eager to help with different programs. So let's talk about IT skills programs that we do in Switzerland or Singapore. We run 3-week training in Switzerland for migrant population in Switzerland. And those are the people from various backgrounds, from Syria, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, Tibet, from different countries. And actually, this 3-week training is taught by our Acronis and our partners' employees. So, I mean, if you are an expert in something, you just volunteer your time, come up there, teach people, and that's how it is. So, yeah. And also, our partners get involved. They can volunteer as well, computers, but they also teach skills. And even here at the summit, our Acronis people come up to our booth, ask, how can we help? How can we volunteer our time? So yeah, it's getting there.
617 million children don't meet the minimum proficiencies of math and reading. So the goal is everlasting in the sense of there's so many kids needs to be met. So in large, the grand goal is to really be able to go to these remote areas where kids aren't getting access to the proper education that they need and build more schools. We do have some more specific goals that maybe you can speak to about.
Yeah, well, when actually in 2018, when the Acronis Cyber Foundation was established, we've committed to build 15 schools, and we've affected 5,000 children with this initiative. But just looking at the impact, we think we can do, and we should do more. So we will just continue building schools. We will continue going to this community, supporting. It's not just the building the school there. You know, we keep supporting the community
we stay engaged.
So even with the school in Peru that we are fundraising here at the summit for, we built the school in 2019. We came back to the community in 2021 to build a computer classroom. And this year, the community reached out to us saying that there is an increased amount of children that do not have space at school. So we are building 3 additional classrooms.
I found it really fascinating to also note, by the way, that Acronis donated all of the registration fees for attending the show to their foundation. Now, I want to note, why do we care? I talk a lot on the show about culture and investment in culture and building that bond. A charity organization like this is distinctly one way to do that. It builds team engagement. It builds collective work together. And let me know, those Gen Z and millennial employees are very focused on social outcomes, feeling that what they're doing at work matters. An investment like this is strategic. And so I wanted to highlight the work that Acronis is doing, not just the fact that they are doing this kind of great work, but it's an intentional strategy choice that makes an awful lot of sense. Now, as you might guess, the buzz is getting really loud here. The party is about to happen just outside the studio. So we're going to wrap it up here from the Acronis CyberFit Summit. You can join us again at 7:30 on Thursday, the 11th, where we'll be at IT Nation doing yet another one of these live streams and covering the events of the week. I have really appreciated the opportunity to be here and interact with you. If you have any comments or questions, go ahead and put them in the comments section of the video if you're catching this in the replay. I will be addressing all of them. Of course, you can always find the daily update of the Business of Tech every single day on your podcatcher of choice or on YouTube every twice a week with at least the weekly show as well as the interview show. With that, thank you very much for joining me this evening. We will catch you next time and talk to you soon. Remember, if you like this kind of content, you can support it directly. Visit patreon.com/MSP Radio for our Give What You Want program. Every little bit helps, and we are supported directly by listeners like you. The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSP Radio or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit mspradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.